This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Monday, April 13th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll look at the fate of campaign dollars given to indicted and ousted former Governor Raul Blagojevich. Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky will have that story. We'll also check the forecast for Champaign-Urbana, a rainy one, but first a look at today's news. A former deputy U.S. Marshal is going on trial in Chicago for allegedly leaking secrets to the mob about a federally protected witness. John T. Ambrose is accused of tipping off organized crime figures about admitted former hitman Nicholas Calabrese. Calabrese was the government's star witness at the 2007 family secrets trial that targeted top members of the Chicago mob. The 50-year-old Ambrose, whose trial begins today, denies he ever broke the law in handling secret information. Ambrose was assigned to guard Calabrese on two occasions when witness security officials lodged him at safe sites in Chicago for questioning by prosecutors. Ambrose is charged with stealing information and passing it to a go-between, believing it would go to a mob boss. Will County Coroner Patrick O'Neill says he blames stronger-than-normal heroin for a minor recent epidemic of overdose deaths in his area. O'Neill says that only 4 months into 2009, there have already been 11 heroin overdose deaths in the county. The latest was that of 18-year-old Matt Kirk of Homer Glen, a senior at Longport Township High School. Kirk's father found him dead on the basement floor of their home April 3rd. O'Neill says in all of 2008, there were only 14 Will County deaths by heroin overdose. He says some of the heroin appears to be so strong that people die before they can even pull the needle out. The Chicago Office of the Drug Enforcement Administration says recent raids have recovered high-purity Mexican heroin. It could be early summer before a Joliet Riverboat Casino reopens. That means another financial blow to the state, which receives money from gambling. Sean Crawford has more.
Gambling receipts in the state dropped last month, and officials blame at least part of the problem on the shutdown of the Empress Casino. The Joliet facility was damaged in a fire, and Penn National Gaming, which runs the Empress, is predicting it could be June before it reopens. That means the state could take a $2 million a month hit while the casino is closed. Gene O'Shea is with the Illinois Gaming Board.
The Empress Casino is very important to the state. Obviously, it's one of the casinos in the Chicago market. The Chicago market tends to be very strong, and losing one of our players in that market, it does affect us.
The city of Joliet is losing roughly $1 million a month from its share of the gambling tax. However, Joliet also has a second casino, Harris, which reports business is up since the Empress fire. The Empress employs about 800 people and continues to pay them while the casino is being repaired. I'm Sean Crawford.
An Illinois congressman says he's still on the fence about running for the U.S. Senate next year. Sam Hunsick has that story.
Congressman Danny Davis lobbied for a Senate appointment last fall before then-Governor Raul Blagojevich was arrested for, among other things, allegedly trying to profit from the appointment. Now Davis is mulling a run in next year's election for Senate, and he compares the decision to a battle with nature.
You know, you may want the honey, but are you willing to walk into a beehive to try and get it?
The Chicago Democrat says his decision depends on whether the bees go to sleep.
There are media bees. There are would-be opponent bees.
One of those possible opponents is the current senator, Roland Burris. Davis is urging Burris to hurry up and make a decision about running. Burris's political spokesperson declined to be interviewed. I'm Sam Hudzik.
Illinois Governor Pat Quinn hosted dozens of developmentally disabled children and their families at the Executive Mansion for an Easter egg hunt over the weekend. It was the first time in several years that the event was held on Easter weekend at the Springfield home. Quinn spokeswoman Libby Quaid says the governor would like to host the hunt every year from now on. The governor read to the children from The Tale of Peter Rabbit while sitting next to a giant Easter bunny. He invited 100 children and their families from a list provided by SPARC, a non-for-profit agency that serves people with developmental disabilities. SPARC spokeswoman Barbara Turner says Quinn came up with the idea for Saturday's event and paid for any supplies that weren't donated by Springfield area businesses. State officials are mulling over which of Illinois' historic sites could be featured on new quarters the U.S. Mint will begin producing next year. Quotas will feature national sites from each of the 50 states, plus the District of Columbia and each U.S. territory. Governors are recommending sites for representation on the quarter. An image of George Washington will be on the other side. Illinois' Historic Preservation Agency says Governor Pat Quinn is considering several designs, but no final decision has been made. Later this month, the U.S. Treasury will make the final design decisions. Last year, the U.S. Mint completed its 10-year state quarter program, which it called the most popular coin program in history. As if the rain and cold weather threatening the Chicago Cubs home opener against the Colorado Rockies weren't enough, there's another goat involved, a dead one this time. Chicago police say they found the severed head of a goat outside Wrigley Field early this morning, about 12 hours before the scheduled game. Officers said they were treating the incident as a prank since the same thing happened last year. Goat and sheep heads are available at a number of ethnic butcher shops in Chicago. The goat's heads are presumably a reference to the alleged goat curse placed on the Cubs in 1945 by tavern owner William Sienis after authorities would not allow him to bring his pet goat into Wrigley Field for a World Series game. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. The sweeping list of supposed misdeeds by Rob Blagojevich partook in as governor of Illinois spelled out across 75 pages of a federal indictment. It's in the final five pages that prosecutors hint at a dollar value of the alleged corruption schemes. In this report, Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky takes a look at where contributions to Blagojevich's campaign are now and where they could end up.
Rod Blagojevich will go down in history as the only Illinois governor to be impeached and removed from office. But he's also made history as the state's most formidable fundraiser. During his campaigns for governor, he shattered previous records. At one point, his Friends of Blagojevich campaign committee had well over $20 million at its disposal. All of that money had to be stored somewhere, and prosecutors have their eyes on where. According to the indictment, Friends of Blagojevich has funds at four different banks: Ravenswood Bank, First Suburban National, the Community Bank of DuPage, and the DuQuoin State Bank.
Has no effect on us whatsoever. The campaign fund is just another customer.
That's John Rednauer Sr., the DuQuoin Bank's major stockholder and chairman of its board of directors. He's also a major Blagojevich donor. Over the years, he's given more than $67,000 to Blagojevich's campaign fund. Rednauer shrugs that off, too. Yes, he says he donated money to Blagojevich.
And every other Democrat candidate for the last 50 years.
Rednauer has not been accused of wrongdoing, nor has his bank. But his connection to Blagojevich has come up before, in 2002, when Blagojevich was fighting to win his first term as governor. A Sun-Times article headlined, "A Blagojevich Quid Pro Quo," details how Blagojevich deposited $1 million of campaign money in Rednauer's bank. Even then, critics were suspicious of Blagojevich exchanging favors with donors. The money was shifted just days before Rednauer's wife, Wanda, who sits on the State Board of Elections, took a vote to dismiss sanctions against Blagojevich. Wanda Rednauer later defended the transfer and timing as innocent, and her husband maintains that today. So no quid pro quo.
No, Lord, no.
Rednauer says the only effect of being listed in the Blagojevich indictment is that prosecutors instructed one of his employees to notify the FBI should Blagojevich try and transfer money in or out of his account. But it's these sort of connections that the Illinois Campaign for Political Reforms, David Morrison, says is why Illinois has laws requiring candidates disclose not just their donors, but also where their donations are held.
Having a lot of money at a bank might itself present a conflict of interest. That if your campaign funds are all kept at one bank or divided among a couple banks, and there's a piece of legislation that might affect that bank, the official might look differently at how that bill would run, depending on how it might affect their bank and therefore their relationship with that bank.
Back in 2002, Blagojevich's campaign initially failed to disclose that it had opened an account at the DuQuoin State Bank, and in doing so violated a state law. Campaigns have to notify the Board of Elections within 10 days of starting or ending business with a bank. And it seems Blagojevich has done so again. Of the four banks listed in the indictment against Blagojevich, only two are on file with the elections authority, DuQuoin and Ravenswood. The last time Blagojevich gave any update on where his campaign treasure stored was in July of 2006. Then he was also using three other banks not listed in the indictment. It might seem like a simple oversight, but Morrison says it reminds him of an instance with another former governor, George Ryan. At the end of his term, Ryan suddenly declared he had $150,000 of campaign cash stored in a previously undisclosed bank. Morrison says there's still no telling where that money came from, and he says Blagojevich failing to make regular disclosures makes him wonder where else Blagojevich has money parked and by what means that money may have been obtained.
I mean, there are warning signs all over this thing, and I don't know what's happening with friends of Blagojevich, but if he, like George Ryan, is keeping money at banks that he hasn't told anyone he's using for banking, that sets off alarm bells. I mean, we've seen this before so recently that I want to know what's going on.
Although it appears Blagojevich broke Illinois campaign disclosure laws, he won't face any repercussions. There's no set penalty for failing to disclose committee fund repositories. While that makes it hard for the public to locate campaign funds, clearly prosecutors investigating corruption within the Blagojevich administration have discovered where at least some of the money is being kept, and they're going after it. Former prosecutor Doug Quivy explains that the government could take Blagojevich's campaign money away through a legal concept called forfeiture.
And all forfeiture is the taking back of property that was used in a criminal offense or proceeds from a criminal offense.
In other words, the government could take any campaign funds Blagojevich received illegally. Right now, the indictment asks to forfeit just over $188,000 from the four banks where the Friends of Blagojevich campaign committee has its assets. It's likely that's how much prosecutors believe is connected with some sort of crime. But Quivy says the amount could reach far higher. If Blagojevich is found guilty on racketeering charges, the assumption would be that all assets were ill-gotten. And it's not just the campaign funds. The indictment also spells out that if the Blagojevich campaign fund is unable to come up with all the money the government wants, Blagojevich could lose his Chicago bungalow or the condo he maintains in Washington, D.C. Blagojevich having to forfeit any property, campaign or personal, is contingent on his being found guilty, however, and the former governor has maintained his innocence. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
In the forecast for today, showers this morning and likely this afternoon, the high around 50 degrees, east winds up to 20 miles per hour. Showers are likely tonight, the low around 38 degrees. Cloudy skies tomorrow, a chance of showers, the high around 48 degrees, mostly cloudy tomorrow night. The low around 35, mostly sunny, not as cool Wednesday, the high around 60. Partly cloudy Wednesday night through Friday night, the low around 45, the high around 68. Partly sunny Saturday, the high around 70. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Monday, April 13th, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.